Hey, thank you for inviting me to this conference. I hope that my talk will not be too much of a shock to, given what you heard about just previous to this. I'm not going to be talking about the Standard Model, but rather a very simple type of geometrical structure, which has come out of this project of generalized geometry, which you may have heard about. Generalized geometrical structures have occurred in physics in several different ways, but the structure I'm going to talk about today hasn't really. It has been kind of it's a very natural thing that has been lying around, but and it's indirectly been used in some physics papers. But I somehow get the feeling, and I hope that you will too, that there should be a direct classical physics kind of interpretation of these structures. So what I'm going to talk about are a certain kind of geometry in four dimensions. They're called four-dimensional generalized complex structures. So we're always going to be talking about smooth, real, four-dimensional manifolds, and I'm going to put a geometry on them. So the geometry is defined. This is not the way it's usually defined. I'll give it I'll define it in a way that I'll find particularly useful in the calculations that I'm going to do later. So this is given by a line subbundle. So it's a subbundle K sitting inside the even dimensional forms, the even rank forms of the manifold. Not the real ones, but I'll complexify it. So we have the even complex forms. So this is just the zero forms plus the two forms plus the four forms complexified. And then sitting inside this vector bundle, I have a line, K. And this line satisfies three conditions. Such that any generator of the line, I'll call it rho, satisfies the following conditions. So first of all, there's an algebraic condition on this form. So this rho, I can write it maybe more easily as rho 0 plus rho 2 plus row 4. I'm just decomposing it into the degree 0, degree 2, and degree 4 pieces. And this satisfies... Okay, so first of all, there's an algebraic condition, which I'll write this way. The second condition is a non-degeneracy condition, which I'll write this way. So this one is equal to 0, this one is not equal to 0. And third, there's an integrability condition, which says that the exterior derivative of rho is not 0, but is given by the action of x plus psi on rho, where x plus psi is a section of t plus t star. Okay. So let me just explain what I mean by this. What is this pairing? So the pairing... is just given by rho 0 sigma 4 minus rho 2 sigma 2 rho 2 wedge sigma 2 plus rho 4 sigma 0. This is inside wedge 4 T star. Okay, so let me just explain why have I written down this pairing and what do these conditions mean. Okay, so this pairing, which takes two differential forms of mixed degree and produces you this top degree form, this is a bilinear pairing on spinners. So this is coming from thinking of the differential forms as spinners for t plus t star. So this bundle t plus t star has a natural metric. It's split. It's kind of reminiscent of some comments that Shlomo was making earlier. So we have a split metric on this bundle, and the spinners for it are given by the differential forms. And this pairing is exactly the bilinear invariant pairing of spinners that exists in many different cases. Sometimes it's skew symmetric, sometimes it's symmetric. In this case, it's symmetric. So this pairing is the one I'm using. So this condition here can be rephrased as saying that rho is a pure spinner. It's just a quadratic algebraic constraint on rho. And this condition can be rephrased as saying that, this is a non-degeneracy condition, which amounts to the fact that the maximal isotropics corresponding to these pure spinners are transverse to each other. So it's a transversality of the maximal isotropics for these spinners. And then this integrability condition, so what do I exactly mean? So if I take rho and I take its exterior derivative, this will be a form of degree 1, 3, and then nothing. So this will be a degree 1 and 3. Then a vector field acts on rho by interior product. So this, when I write x here, I just mean that you have to hook x into rho, thereby lowering its degree. And psi, being in t star, raises degree by 1, so just by exterior product. And this is a better condition than d rho equals 0 because it's invariant under rescaling. If I were to rescale rho by a function, then this is still a condition which holds. Whereas if I take a closed form and rescale it, there's no guarantee that it would be closed. Okay. So this seems like, I'm giving it to you in this kind of ad hoc way, but the reason, maybe the inspiration for this, comes from two kind of key examples. So one example comes from the fact that what would happen if K was only of degree 2? So I said that K is a subbundle of the 0, 2, and 4 forms. What about if the 0 and 4 form part were gone? So so if K was actually a subbundle of the 2 forms, okay, then this condition would say that rho... So this condition here would say that rho wedge rho is equal to 0, which says that rho is decomposable. Okay, and this condition here would say that rho is wedging with its conjugate to be non-zero. So this means that rho determines a complex structure for which this K, which I'm talking about, is actually the 2-0 forms. So it's actually the canonical bundle, the canonical line bundle of a complex manifold. Okay, so from this point of view, you can think of a complex manifold as being defined by giving a line inside this bundle, a line subbundle. Does anyone have questions about that? That way of thinking? Okay. The second example would be, I'm going to take rho to be mixed type now. I can take K to be generated by rho, which is equal to e to the I omega, where omega is a symplectic structure. So we can see that this condition here is automatically satisfied, and this condition here says that omega is non-degenerate. So the key thing I want to point out, K has non-zero. So K has non-trivial projection to the zero forms. So it's really not, it's very different from the previous case where K was purely in the two forms. Now if we allow K to have some, so what I mean by this, just in case, is 1 plus I omega minus 1 half omega wedge omega. That's what e to the I omega, that's exactly what I mean by that. So it's a mixed degree form in the zero. So it's important, I should make this comment. If I want to specify the data of a two-form, you might think, well, why do I give this line k? Why don't I just give the line generated by omega itself? The problem is that I need, in order to have a symplectic structure, to get my hands on it, I need to have the actual form, not simply just the form up to rescaling. Since I give you now 1 plus I omega and omega wedge omega, you can simply look at the ratio of the first two terms and extract what the real symplectic form is. So if I were to rescale rho, if I put a function in front of here, that wouldn't change the symplectic structure that I'm defining. Okay, so
integrability, so all complex rather than almost complex is symplectic. That comes from
That's right. So here we're familiar with the fact that if we have a two-form, a decomposable complex two-form, which satisfies those two algebraic conditions, such that it's maybe not closed, but d of it is psi wedge something, then we have Frobenius integrability, we have Newlander-Nirenberg, and so we get a complex structure. Similarly, well, in this case, this condition, you can see quite easily that this implies that the two-form omega is closed. That's maybe just a quick calculation. Okay, but so the idea of generalized complex structure is that we have, at least in this simple dimension 4, in dimension 4, we have some kind of unified description of complex structures and symplectic structures. And so we somehow put them on the same footing. But a kind of almost immediate byproduct of doing this is that you could imagine having a generalized complex structure on a four-dimensional manifold, which is symplectic in some places and which is complex in other places. Okay. That's what I'm going to describe next. So this is maybe the main example to understand. I'll just define it. Let's say rho is given by, so the space I'll define it on is just C2. Choose coordinates z1 and z2. And then write the following differential form. Okay. So this is a mixed degree form. And if we check the conditions, so first of all, we need that rho pairs with itself to be zero, so that it's a pure form. This is clear just because this is a decomposable two form. This is just equal to dz wedge itself, which is zero. And then the non-degeneracy comes from since dz1 wedge dz2 wedges with its complex conjugate in a non-trivial way. Okay. And then the interesting, maybe I should just bullet these. And then the interesting integrability condition says that I need some control over the exterior derivative, so I need to be able to find a vector field and a one-form which control the exterior derivative of rho. And indeed, d rho is not zero, but it's equal to dz1, which I can obtain by hooking rho by d by dz2, which is minus d by dz2 applied to rho. So we get the integrability condition for this form is satisfied also. Okay, so this is it's easy to see that this form does satisfy the conditions we need. But But I would like to understand what the geometry of this form is. So in the same way that we have a better understanding of what complex and symplectic geometry is, what is the geometry of this thing? Well, so to see that, I should maybe make two comments. So when Z1 is non-zero, okay, then rho is just equal to Z1 times 1 plus dz1 wedge dz2 over z1, okay, which is just a function. So I'll just say that it's just a function, or yeah, so it's just z1 times the e to the dz1 wedge dz2 over z1. So this means that k is actually generated by e to the b plus I omega, where b plus I omega is equal to dz1 wedge dz2 over z1. Okay. So in this region where z1 is non-zero, you can interpret this line that I've given, k, as being somehow containing inside itself, it's defining really a symplectic structure. And the symplectic structure is given by this form. So I could even write out what the symplectic structure is. Maybe here. Okay, so the symplectic structure is really, well, if I draw a picture, here's Z1, Z2. In this region here, where Z1 is non-zero, right, then if I choose coordinates, say Z1 is equal to R e to the I theta, and Z2 is equal to U plus IV, the symplectic form looks like D log R wedge D U plus d theta wedge dv. So this is a symplectic form on this four-dimensional real vector space, which is blowing up at r equals to zero. I mean, we have a logarithmic blow up for along this line here. Okay. Okay, but on the other hand, when z1 is equal to zero, so this is the second case. So when Z1 is equal to 0, this form has a very simple form. It just looks like a complex structure. Rho is just equal to dz1 wedge dz2, which is the generator for the canonical bundle of a complex structure. So rho defines a complex structure along Z1 equals 0. So this region here, this submanifold. So this is an example of the phenomenon I was alluding to. So what we have is a geometry which is symplectic almost everywhere, except it undergoes a type change along a submanifold. And this is somehow some kind of generic behavior for these generalized complex four manifolds. So we'll typically see this kind of behavior. And I'll give many more examples. But what I really wanted to point out is that this geometry has kind of the features of both complex and symplectic geometry, depending on where you're looking. Does anyone want some clarification on this particular example?
Well, it'd be sort of generic, but always generically symplectic, and then degenerate it to complex or something. So it can never be the other way.
It can't be the other way. There's many ways of seeing it. Here, the places where it's complex is exactly where the zeroth component vanishes. So it's given somehow by the vanishing of some, maybe two real functions. Okay, so let me, to give you a better flavor of what these might look like, I'll give you some more examples. And I'll try to kind of answer some natural questions you might ask about these. Like, in complex geometry, we know what holomorphic functions are, what are complex submanifolds. Similarly, in symplectic geometry, we have Lagrangian submanifolds and symplectic submanifolds. What would be the kind of analogous things here? I could also mention, so note, this example is invariant for Z2 translations. So we could quotient this by translations in the vertical direction. So we could quotient to get an example on T2 cross R2 using this example, just by kind of quotienting in this way. Just because everything is invariant in the Z2 direction. Okay. So what other examples could we produce? So here's another example. Let's say let's take the manifold S1 cross S3, which is maybe an interesting case to pick because it definitely does not have a symplectic form. It has no, it doesn't have the right kind of second cohomology. So this is an interesting example of a generalized complex manifold. And let me write it just so that I can conveniently write down the generalized complex structure. Let's write it as C2 minus the origin, modded out by multiplication by 2. So really what it looks like is, so this is Z1 and Z2. And I'm taking every complex vector and quotient and identifying it with twice itself. So what we end up with is this region here with the boundary identification. So this is S1 cross S3. And I can write the following form, which is Z1, Z2, the product, plus DZ1, wedge DZ2. So it looks kind of similar to the one before, but it has the feature that when I do the boundary identification, everything scales in the same way. So Z1 scales by 2, this one by 2 as well, and similarly this by 4. So we get although this form is not well defined on the space, the line that it generates is well defined. So the line generated by rho is well defined on S3 cross S1, and for the same reason as what we checked over here, you can see that this will define a generalized complex structure as well. For the same reasons as above, this is a generalized complex structure, except that now where does the type change occur? So it looks symplectic as long as Z1, Z2 is invertible. But wherever each of them is zero, so in particular on the intersection of the axes with this S1 cross S3, we have a problem where the symplectic structure blows up. So here in the shaded regions, we have a symplectic structure which is blowing up and becoming in some sense a complex structure along these loci. And I should also point out that because this is, if you just look at the intersection of the axis, the Z1 axis with this region, this locus is really a two torus. So this is a two torus, and this one is a two torus as well, because it's simply the quotienting, it's an annulus with boundaries identified. So here we have two examples. The one above of a type change along a torus, a two torus, and this one as well is an interesting manifold S3 cross S1, which supports a generalized complex structure with type change along a pair of two tori. Okay. So this is another kind of example. So as soon as you realize that some quite bizarre four manifolds will support this structure. You might ask, well, what is the class of four manifolds that supports this kind of geometry? We don't know the answer to that. So what we've been trying to do is produce as many crazy examples as we can, just to probe, what part of four manifold geometry, how is this notion of generalized complex geometry compatible with the four manifolds that are available. Okay, and I should also say that with Jill Cavalcanti, we have a few interesting surgeries we developed. Some interesting surgeries. For generalized four manifolds, for generalized complex four manifolds. And I'll try to describe some of them now. And this will allow us to, find many more more interesting examples of these objects. But in particular, so let me just make some comments. Okay. The type change locus, this region where the symplectic form was blowing up, this type change occurs. So it has a notion of order. So here we see that the zeroth component, the zero degrees component of the form, is vanishing to order one along each axis. So when of order one is always a two torus. Okay, and this is similar to the fact that any anti-canonical divisor inside a complex surface is always an elliptic curve. So the proof is virtually identical to that one. I'm not going to bother proving it. However, any Riemann surface may appear. So this was something that was maybe not so obvious from the beginning. But we can find examples where any Riemann surface serves as the type change locus. I'll give you the simplest example of this right now. Okay, so if I give any Riemann surface, think of its tangent bundle as the four manifold. So I'll take this as my four manifold. So I'll draw a picture. Here's sigma, and here's its tangent bundle. Then, if we choose coordinates, so in coordinates, zv for t sigma. So suppose that z is some small coordinate on the Riemann surface itself, and v is coordinatizing the tangent direction. Then I can write the following. I can write v squared plus dz wedge dv as rho. This defines a generalized complex structure which changes type with type change sigma, the zero section. Okay, the reason why, so notice that there's a second power here. So it's, as I was saying, you would need the type change to be higher order than one in order to get higher genus Riemann surfaces. But you can see why this works. When you change your coordinate, what happens to the vector component is that it gets multiplied by the Jacobian. And here there's two factors of the Jacobian, whereas here there will be one factor from the Jacobian coming from the coordinate transformation and another coming from the tangent direction. So there'll be two factors of Jacobian on each term, which makes the generalized complex structure well defined over the whole over the whole Riemann surface. So here we have a kind of interesting situation where you have a symplectic structure almost everywhere, which is blowing up on this Riemann surface in such a way so that it defines a complex structure there. This DZ1 wedge DZ2. Okay. So all right. So this, I guess it's important to focus on the fact that we have something which is almost symplectic, but there is this type change locus, and the type change locus is quite controlled. It can't just be anything. It has to be some kind of Riemann surface. Okay. So let me kind of talk about two surgeries which we found useful in this context. So I said before that the neighborhood, so surgery number one, so I'll call it the log transform. So we said before that in the T2 cross R2 example, okay, the symplectic form had a logarithmic singularity, so it looked like d log omega looked like d log r wedge du plus d theta wedge dv. Okay, so it makes sense to imagine that we could, well, here's an example. Here we have a two torus, a type change. So since we have this logarithmic singularity as we're approaching here, we could imagine, for example, trying to cut this out and gluing it into some other symplectic manifold, as long as the symplectic forms were sufficiently, as long as they were the same. So if we compare this with a symplectic structure with a symplectic neighborhood, tubular neighborhood of a symplectic two torus. Two torus with a trivial normal bundle. Okay, so suppose that now, all right. Okay, so suppose that now we had some other four manifold which was symplectic. Okay. And we had inside here a two torus, which was symplectic. Okay. And it had trivial normal bundle. Okay. Then we know from the Weinstein local normal form, the local neighborhood theorem, that the symplectic form near this T2 is of a standard form. So we know here that the symplectic form looks like R dr d theta plus d theta 2 wedge d theta 3. So it looks just like a standard symplectic disk cross a symplectic two torus. But if we compare that with this, okay, we see that away from the singularity. So if we remove, let's say, a disk neighborhood of r equals zero, then we can arrange for these to be symplectomorphic as long as we switch two of the circles. So there's this d theta in the base, and we need to switch it with this d theta coming from the fiber. So maybe if I draw a picture, it will become more clear. Okay. So the idea is that that if we have this symplectic two torus, so this is our symplectic. Okay. What we could do is take a tubular neighborhood of this two torus and replace it with this type change a neighborhood of the type change tutoris. So this is the T2 cross R2 example that I gave at the beginning. All right. So what I need to do is remove this tubular neighborhood of the symplectic tutoris and replace it with this tubular neighborhood. Okay. Except that this the theta in the base d theta twiddle is going to be sent to du, which was in the fiber direction. So this circle gets sent up here to one of these two circles, and this circle is really sent up here. So this is called a type of logarithmic transformation. Okay. So this means that. So let me give you an example of how you would actually apply this. So where do we find lots of symplectic tutori with trivial normal bundles? We could look at elliptic fibrations. Okay. So an interesting example was to take the K3 surface. So suppose we take an elliptic K3 surface. So this is a fibration over S2 by elliptic curves. And suppose we took one of these, and of course this is going to be a symplectic tutoris. So we could do this surgery, remove some disk neighborhood of it, and replace a fiber neighborhood with the generalized complex T2 cross R2 example. Okay. Really, it's a T2 cross, just take a disk in the R2, T2 cross D2, right? And then what you'll end up with is a different four-manifold. I'll draw it as a fibration in this way. So instead of the two-sphere, it's now going to be over the two-sphere minus a disk. So it's a fibration where the generic fiber is a symplectic tutoris. But then on top of this boundary circle, we'll have the type change. I'll maybe draw it this way. This is the type change locus. All right, so it's perhaps not immediately obvious to see, but the topology of this new surgered manifold is actually is that it's diffeomorphic to 3CP2, connect some with 19 CP2 bars. Okay. So we went from a K3 surface, we did this logarithmic surgery, and we got this manifold, okay, which can be kind of, I mean, the best way to think about it is as this fibration by symplectic tutori, which has this generalized complex type change fibering over a disk. So the reason that we were pleased with this particular result of the surgery is because this manifold is known to forbid the existence of symplectic or complex structures. So maybe I'll just stress that. So it was known from Gonsmavka, let's say. Although there's other references I could give, implies that the Seiberg-Witten invariance of that manifold, 3CP2, connects some with 19 CP2 bars. These all vanish, which means that it cannot have any symplectic structure. So it cannot support symplectic structure. Even though the cohomology seems to be fine for it, I mean, there's no problem with cohomology. It's just that there's a more sophisticated obstruction to the existence of symplectic structures. And since B1 is equal to zero, since it's simply connected, we can use Kodaira's theorem to say that it cannot be complex either. because Schrödinger's theorem says that if it were complex, then it would have to be algebraic, because B1 is equal to 0, and something algebraic is automatically symplectic, which contradicts this. Okay. So here we have, just by doing this logarithmic surgery, just by looking at what the symplectic geometry near this blow-up locus looks like, we found, so this example was the first interesting example we found with Gilles. So it's an example of a simply connected compact four-manifold, which is generalized complex, but is neither symplectic nor complex. So it somehow shows that this geometry really does apply to a larger class of four-manifolds than what you would normally think. Okay. Okay, so the second thing I want to do is explain the second surgery that Gilles and I came up with, which produces some more examples. And we were really motivated by the idea that, you know, when you take a connect sum with 19 with a CP2 bar, that's really the same as blowing up a point. If you blow up a point in a complex surface, what you're doing topologically is doing a connect sum with CP2 bar. So if we had some means of blowing down, then we could perhaps get rid of these 19 CP2 bars and get down to 3 CP2, three CP2s would be a nice example, because this was really the first example that people pointed to as a manifold which is not symplectic or complex. So the connect sum of 3 CP2s is maybe the first example where we knew that the Cyber-Guitton all vanished. So the second surgery I want to talk about is blow up and blow down. Okay. And in a way, so this blow up procedure is also somewhat inspired by blowing up and down in non-commutative manifolds. Non-commutative surfaces have a similar flavor to this procedure. Okay, so what would it mean to blow up a point in a generalized complex four-manifold? So we know, for example, in symplectic geometry or in complex geometry, we can always blow up points. The main difference, of course, is that in symplectic geometry, when you blow up a point, when you introduce that exceptional divisor, you have to choose its area. So there's some choice involved in the blow-up, whereas in complex geometry, it's canonical. So in this case, let's consider a simple type change locus. So let P be a point where C is the type change locus. So you should really think that there is some submanifold C, and I'll choose a point on it, P. And this is exactly where the symplectic structure is blowing up and defining this complex structure. So near P, you can show that this type change locus has the form, or the generalized complex structure has the form, so K has the form rho, where rho is Z1 plus dZ1, which is dZ2. So here, okay, so what I'm doing is just looking very close to this point P and getting a normal form for the type change of this generalized complex structure and putting it into this form. So this is not completely obvious that you can do this, but it's reasonable given the fact that everything near that is really symplectic, and we in fact do use a Moser type argument to prove that statement. Okay. So we have a type changing structure which looks like this in some neighborhood. What would happen if we blew up this point? So let's say we blow up P. Okay. Then something quite interesting happens. So the calculation for the blow-up, I'll do it in a straightforward way in coordinates. So if we start off with the C and P, if I blow this up, what I'll get is an exceptional divisor, E, which is just diffeomorphic to S2. And then the type change locus is here. Okay. So the blow-up contraction map is just the one that kills the exceptional divisor. Okay. And I'll just describe what the pullback structure is on each of these two charts. So in this chart, when we do the blow-up, we just replace Z1 with the product Z1, Z2. So the new generalized complex structure on this chart is going to be Z1, Z2 plus D, Z1, Z2, wedge D, Z2, okay, which is, these blow-up calculations are always a little bit confusing, but I'm trying to do it in a convenient way, D, Z1, wedge D, Z2, right, and then I can, oh, sorry, I can get rid of the Z2s, and I get Z1 plus DZ1, which is DZ2. Okay. So, actually, I've drawn the arrow in the wrong case. So, in this coordinate chart, the blow up looks exactly like the original. So, here, if we look at this intersection of the exceptional divisor with the type change, the generalized complex structure looks just as it did here, which is to say that the type is changing precisely on this curve C. Okay. Whereas in this coordinate chart, in the other coordinate chart, okay, then rho tilde will look like, so Z1 stays the same and I replace Z2 with the product. Right? And this looks like Z1 plus basically Z1 D Z1 wedge D Z2. Which is, I can get rid of this since I'm only looking at the line generated by it, which is given by 1 plus D Z1 wedge D Z2, which says that there is no type change here. So it looks just like E to the DZ1 wedge DZ2. It looks like a symplectic structure. So that's to say that when I blew it up, what happened is that I introduced a two-sphere, and even along this new exceptional divisor, This was all symplectic. Okay, it didn't introduce anything, any more type change than was already present. Okay, so here we have still the symplectic form is blowing up along C. Okay, so that's quite interesting. I mean, we're used to the fact that if we blow up a point in a complex surface, we introduce a complex submanifold called the exceptional divisor, right? But in this case, what property does this submanifold have? It's not complex because it's living in a symplectic manifold mostly. It hits this complex curve in one point, but the interesting thing is that the interesting thing to note, which is clear to see, that note E is actually Lagrangian away from C. So in this region, if you forget about its intersection point with C, it's Lagrangian here. The reason is that the symplectic form dz1 wedge dz2, at least the imaginary part of this, if we restrict this to C, if we restrict this to E, we get zero. Okay, the exceptional divisor in the complex coordinate z1 z2, this is of type 1 1. It's just a complex curve. So if we restrict a 2-0 form to it, it must vanish, and in particular, the imaginary part vanishes. Okay, so so what we have is an interesting kind of submanifold, which is Lagrangian almost everywhere, except that it it intersects the type change locus at one point. Okay, so these are the analogs, if you will, of Lagrangian submanifolds or complex submanifolds. They provide for you a natural class of submanifolds of these generalized complex manifolds. And if there was a connection to classical physics, I would imagine that it would be using these types of things, which are mostly Lagrangian, but they can intersect a type change. Okay. So E, this means that E is a two-sphere of self-intersection minus one. So it's a minus one sphere, just because it's obtained by blowing up a point in C2. Is Lagrangian except where it intersects C, the type change. Okay. So the so this kind of okay. What Jill and I then proved. So this is with Cavalcanti. So we first proved that this is a well-defined operation in the sense that it doesn't really depend on the choice of coordinates that I made. So this is well-defined operation. But that furthermore, it's reversible. So and if we find such an E, it can be blown down. Okay. So this means that all we need to do is find a two-sphere of self-intersection minus one, which is Lagrangian except everywhere except where it intersects the type change locus, and then we can blow it down. So the way that such a theorem is proven is the way that regular blowdown theorems are proven. You need to prove a local normal form theorem for a two-bitter neighborhood of such submanifolds. You can think that this is how it's done for complex surfaces, for example. So, so let me just mention that this is just a remark that these submanifolds are examples of brains. So it's possible to consider a kind of topological version of string theory with target four manifolds of this type, and these would be possible boundary conditions for the strings, which are why they're called brains, membranes. It's only a name. I don't have any particular reason I can't get any mileage out of using that at the moment. But I'll make some comments at the end about these brains. So just keep them in mind. Okay. But the interesting thing is that these spherical brains of self-intersection minus one can be blown down. So where can we find these? Such brains. So what we thought was to take the example we had, which I just erased, of the three CP2s plus the 19 CP2 bars, and try to find 19 of these brains that we could perhaps blow down. So in a symplectic vibration, so what we had before was, for example, K3, okay, we had this situation where the base was an S2, and the generic fiber was a symplectic 2 torus. But then there are some special fibers here, where, for example, in the most generic case, this special fiber would be a nodal cubic. So it would be something like this. So this, you would have a cycle here in the smooth fiber, which would be degenerating as you approached from this point P, as you approached this special point, this circle would pinch off and become a point. There's a well-known method of vanishing cycles or thimbles, where you follow this vanishing cycle and produce a two-dimensional surface, which is actually Lagrangian. So I'll call this a Lagrangian vanishing cycle. Okay. And so the idea is that in this K3 surface, which has several of these special fibers, we get these vanishing cycles, these Lagrangian disks. And then if we do our surgery, what the surgery is doing is precisely taking this circle and replacing it. So it's doing a surgery where we'll remove a tubular neighborhood of this smooth fiber and replace it with a type-changing locus, and also pinching off this circle. Okay, so maybe here. So under the surgery, in the fiber neighborhood of P, okay, what happens is that we now have this. Remember, we open up the two sphere, so we've now introduced the boundary near this point P, and now this vanishing cycle gets closed off. Gets closed off to this vanishing cycle becomes a minus one sphere, which intersects the type change. Which, I mean, we introduced the type change. Remember, I said that the type change somehow the type change C was introduced as fibering over the boundary of this missing region. Okay, so the interesting thing is that there are enough of these special fibers to produce enough of these Lagrangian vanishing cycles so that you can actually remove 19 of them. So using this method, can get to a manifold. So we can blow down the three CP2s and get rid of these 19 CP2 bars and get to the three CP2. This involves a bit of Kirby calculus, but these 19 CP2 bars can be found by this method of vanishing cycles. So this is just a few of the ways that you can manipulate these generalized complex four manifolds and get, you know, some maybe surprising examples. It doesn't solve the problem which we're really faced with now, which is, you know, which four manifolds actually do support these generalized complex geometrical structures. Are there obstructions? If there are obstructions, what are they? Are they something related to the Seiberg-Witten invariance? Are they some kind of strengthening of the Seiberg-Witten invariance? It's kind of unclear. But maybe the one thing that I'll leave you with is that when you take these symplectic vibrations, which are typically over S2, and you start introducing these holes, you kind of get an interesting idea. I mean, maybe just I just wanted to remark that what you end up with is a picture where the base, so the base of these generalized symplectic vibrations seems to be a two-manifold with boundary, and there seems to be no kind of limit to what kind of two-manifolds with boundary you could consider. For example, the example that I gave earlier, the one which had type change along two tori, this actually fibers over a cylinder with boundary with two boundaries. So this would be a picture of a cylinder with two boundaries. And it's possible to get another example similar to this, which would be a kind of pair of pants. It would fiber over a pair of pants with boundaries, with these three boundaries. So at the moment, I'm not so sure what the significance of this is, but if anyone has any ideas, I'd be glad to hear about them. Thanks for your attention. Right, so that's a good question. I don't know the full answer, but definitely these brains that I was talking about have to do with what that category would be. And the other thing I should mention about that is that there's an interesting connection between these brains. Like, so let me just draw a picture of one of these brains. For example, suppose that we were in CP2. If we were in CP2, we can find a generalized complex structure which changes type along a cubic curve, and which is symplectic everywhere else. Right? Now, if we took a P1 and a P1 in the CP2, this P1 would be an example of this brain, in the sense that it would be Lagrangian everywhere except where it intersects this type change locus at these three points. Okay. So what we have is a two-dimensional surface, which is Lagrangian except for a few points, right? And the natural type of brains that you consider on those things are flat bundles on Lagrangian. I mean, whenever you have a Lagrangian, you think of a flat bundle over it. But here, because it's only Lagrangian away from the three points, you end up with considering flat bundles away from these, let's say, marked points or away from certain points. And so that starts to bring you very close to Higgs bundles. You know, considering Higgs bundles with singularities. And the interesting thing is that these type change loci don't have to be order one vanishing. They could be high